I'd like to invite you this morning to open your Bibles to Romans, the third chapter, verses 10 through 18. Romans chapter 3, verses 10 through 18. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God. They have all turned aside. They have together become unprofitable. There is none who does good. No, not one. Their throat is an open tomb. With their tongues they have practiced deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips. Whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness? Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. And the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. I think it would be safe to say that most of us have had the experience of being burned one time or another. The memory of this sharp pain makes a lasting impression on your mind. And as a result, we hold a healthy respect for fire and other hot things. The fear of what fire could do in us generates a healthy respect for the fire. The concept of respect and fear often are found hand in hand with each other. The thieves on the cross had this conversation in Luke chapter 23, beginning with verse 39. One of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed Jesus and said, "If you are the Christ, save yourself and us." But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, "Do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And indeed, we justly, for we received the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." I want you to notice the statement here. Where is your fear of God? In the situation you're in, you don't even fear God now? Even on the doorstep of death, the thief did not consider that soon he would appear before God in judgment. The punishment dealt out by man, no doubt, was harsh. But what would God do? What would God do? In laying out the condition of man, Paul proves conclusively that all have sinned. In Romans chapter 3, verses 21 through 23, the righteousness of God apart from the law is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God through faith in Christ Jesus to all and on all who believe. For there is no difference, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The reason why people continue in sin is because there is no fear of God within them. That's the reason. Now, you say, well, what exactly are you driving at here? What do you mean by fearing God? Well, quite simply, we are terrified of what God could do to us in His wrath. Think about that. In Matthew, in Matthew 10 and verse 28, Jesus said, "Do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the spirit or the soul. But rather, fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell." I want you to listen to what Jesus said, and I want you to take it to heart. Fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Jesus believed that fear of God, and I mean of being afraid of what he could do, was a proper motivation. In classical Greek, it is that terror, looking at the definition of the word here, that causes you to blindly run in fear. But we're not talking about classical Greek. In the scriptures, it isn't a blinding fear that we're talking about. Notice, if you will, in context, what follows in Matthew 10:29. Now, just after he said, "Fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell." Then he says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows." Now, what's he talking about here? Well, he's showing us that fearing God must include realizing his love for us, so we do not fear. Should you be afraid of God and his wrath? Yeah. But you must recognize that his love for you will cause you to not have that fear. And whenever we start experiencing that fear, there's reason for concern. There's reason for concern. Fear is a starting motivation. If you look at Proverbs 1 and verse 7 with me, the wise man wrote, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise the wisdom and instruction." For many people, it's knowing that the test is coming and the fear of failing. The fear of failing the course that gets us motivated to study. I suppose if I asked for a show of hands of procrastinators, I'd have quite a few. But you know what I mean. You find out that a test is going to come, and you have several months to study. But you don't start studying until you get down to the wire. And you go, "Uh-oh, I might fail. I've got to study." And you start cramming and you spend all night and your eyeballs are all... Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. You do that. Well, that's what we're talking about in this regard. We know the test is coming and we're afraid we'll fail. So we get motivated. But the thing is, in regard to this, you learn the subject, you get caught up, and guess what happens? The fear subsides. And the excitement of the learning replaces the fear. That's how it works. Now, people say, "Well, I don't want to do what's right just because I'm afraid of going to hell." To that, I would reply, yes, you do. Yes, you do. In Isaiah 8, beginning at verse 12, "Do not say a conspiracy concerning all this people called a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. The Lord of hosts, him shall you hallow. Let him be your fear. Let him be your dread." Yeah. Fear is very, very important. Fear helps us to move, to do something. Fear also keeps us from going back. And that's extremely important. Fear keeps us from going back. Abraham was a man who showed a fear of God when he placed obedience to God above the life of his son, the son of promise. In Genesis 22, verse 12, notice, well, I'll set it up real quick. Abraham was commanded by God to offer his son, the son of promise, to offer him on an altar. He took him up on the mountain. He tied him up. He laid him on the wood. He raised a knife. And then suddenly, an angel of the Lord stayed his hand and said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for I know that you fear God. Why? Since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Abraham was afraid. But he didn't let that stop him. He did what God told him to do. Now, the duty of man is, notice, fear God and keep His commandments. That's exactly what we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. For this is man's all. And also, we also read in Revelation that we have reason to fear God because of His judgment. In Revelation 14 and verse 7, the angel said, or the loud voice said, "Fear God and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment has come. Worship Him who made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of water." Judgment is coming. Our reaction to it will depend upon how well we have prepared for it. And those who are ill prepared have reason to be afraid. Notice Moses started talking about the care that God had, and he ends with the discipline of God that should lead all to fear Him. Now, turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8. I want you to read this and follow along in the line of thinking here. Moses is the speaker. "You shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep His commandments or not. So He humbled you and allowed you to hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that He might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Your garments did not wear out, nor did your food or your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in His ways and to fear Him." Notice, Moses starts out talking about all things God has done for His people, and he ends up speaking about the discipline that should lead us to fear God. The fear of God is something that will keep us from evil. In Proverbs 16 and verse 6, "In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by fear of the Lord, one departs from evil." By fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. Because we know that God's wrath can be so severe, if we are found to be unrighteous before Him, we want no part of it. And consequently, we depart from evil. That's what the problem is with the people, as we noted in our first context, the people had no fear of God before their eyes. They weren't afraid of anything. Oh, God won't do anything. Well, I got news for you. You have reason to fear. You have reason to fear. Since the fear of God motivates us to do His will and refrain from evil, we would expect that a person without the fear of God will become sinful. And indeed, they will. In fact, they have no reason to bind themselves to the laws of God. If you look at Psalm 36, I just want to read through verses 1 through 4 here. David is the writer of this psalm, and he says that in the beginning of it, an oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Sounds familiar? For he flatters himself in his own eyes when he finds out his iniquity and when he hates. The words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. That's the problem. The wicked do not abhor evil. The history of mankind has been littered with the result of those who have no fear of God. Self-righteousness, wickedness of all types, lying, violence is all common among men. Why? Because they have no fear of God before their eyes. Well, what happens to a man who does not fear God? Let's look at it and see if we can draw some conclusions here. First thing is he refuses to seek God. And consequently, he refuses to walk in the ways of righteousness. If you look with me at Romans chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, Paul there writes, "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is no one who understands. There is no one who seeks after God." In Psalm 14, the first four verses, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek God. They have all turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There is none who does good, no, not one. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call on the Lord?" It starts with denial of God and leads to utter corruption, basically. Romans chapter 1, verse 28, Paul says, "Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting." I'm not going to read that whole chapter, last part of that chapter, but that sums it up right there. Because man denies God, God turns him over to depravity. And as a result, calamity of their own making comes upon them. Read Proverbs 1, verse 25 through 33. "Because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke, I will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror comes upon you, when your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they have hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would have none of my counsel and despised my every rebuke. Therefore, they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled to the full with their own fancies. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. What happens to the person who does not fear God? Well, he becomes without value to God. He becomes without value. In Romans 3:12, they have all turned aside. They have together become unprofitable. There is none who does good, no, not one. And I might also mention, the words of his mouth become poison. They become poison. In Romans 3:13-14, their throat is an open tomb. Their tongues have practiced deceit. Poison of asps on their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Now, we know that it is a righteous man who bridles his tongue. James, in James 1:25-26, said, "Look, who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it is not a forgetful hearer, but is a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless." When there's no fear of God, evil comes from the tongue. And James, in this chapter, develops this thought of the tongue being a great evil and one that's hard to tame. But unfortunately, the tongue can be our downfall. In looking at this unrighteous man whose mouth becomes poison, full of cursing and bitterness, we realize that a righteous man has speech that is well seasoned. In Colossians 4:6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." But the wicked sees no need to control his words. No need. James goes on in James chapter 3, verses 5-12, about the tongue being a small member and boasting great things, and talking about how great a fire, just a little thing, a little fire kindles. And then he says, "The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. And it is so set amongst our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on course the nature, or on course of, sets on fire the course of nature." I'll get that out in a minute. "It's set on fire by hell. Every kind of beast and bird, we all those can be tamed, but the tongue, no man can tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless God, our Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be." But this man out here who has no fear of God, his words become weapons used to injure. In the 64th Psalm, verses 2-4, David says, "Hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the rebellion of the workers of iniquity, who sharpen their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the blameless. Suddenly," he says, "they shoot at him and do not fear." What about this man who does not fear God? He's a violent man. Violent. Notice back in Romans 3 and verse 15, their feet are swift to shed blood. When God is ignored, men become animals. They practice the law of the jungle, the strong preying on the weak. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, verses 10 through 19, the wise man said, "My son, if sinners entice you, don't give consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly, let us swallow them up.' My son, don't walk in this way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner." Self-destructive. But also, the man who does not have any fear of God is without peace. Romans 3, 16, 17, "Destruction and misery are in his ways, and the way of peace they have not known." Isaiah 57, verse 21, reminded that there is no peace for the wicked. Isaiah 59, verse 6 through 8, "Their webs will not become garments, nor will they cover themselves with their work. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood." Look at verse 8. "The way of peace they have not known." The way of peace they have not known. Oh, how unlike the righteous who have the peace of God which surpasses all understanding. And that peace of God guards your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus. We must remind ourselves to maintain a healthy fear of God. The fear of God and a respect for His laws go hand in hand with peacefulness and love for mankind. We teach our children to fear flame. A child does not know what a flame is, and they're fascinated with it. All they see is something flickering, and it's so enticing. And so they want to touch it. They want to touch it. But we instill in our children a fear for that flame. We make them understand, hopefully without experiencing it, that it will burn them. And we keep them away from it. We teach our children to avoid busy streets. Not because they've gone into the street and gotten hit, so they know that. Because we understand it. And we instill the fear of what can happen to them so that they won't do it. And we instill in our children a fear of strangers. Don't talk to strangers. They don't have to have an awful experience along this line to get this fear in them. They must have it instilled in them. Likewise, we should instill in them a fear of God and a healthy respect for God. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 28 and 29, Apostle Paul says, "Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire." We better keep that in mind. We better keep that in mind. Yes, he's a God of love and compassion, and he abundantly blesses us, but he is a consuming fire. When? When we violate his laws. When we transgress his laws.